Hello, mead friends. Welcome to the Regenerative Mead Podcast. I'm your host, Brando Tice, and today I'm excited to share the interview Frank and I did with Lily Murray at the Edge of Urban Farms. Golden Coast Mead bought the Mineolas we used in the new Mineola Sunshine Rain Mead from Lily, and we sit down with her to talk about her regenerative organic farming practices and what that means for her and the farm. We start off the conversation with a little bit of history of the farm and how it came to be what it is today. Then we dive into the organic and regenerative farming practices which Lily and her parents use at Edge of Urban Farms. Now let's get into it.
Hey everyone! Here at Golden Coast Mead, we consider drinking alcohol not only a luxury, but a celebration of life. If you partake in this celebration, we advocate for drinking regenerative mead made from real honey to help shift the $1.5 trillion alcohol industry in a better direction. When you drink our regenerative mead, you are helping to make the earth healthier, more biodiverse, and abundant. Drop monoculture-based booze and drink regenerative mead. Visit our website, www.goldencoastmead.com, to learn more about our regenerative mead business and be a part of the celebration. Cheers.
All right. Cheers, everyone.
Cheers.
Cheers.
We are here with Lily. You want to introduce yourself?
Hi. My name is Lily Murray. I am an organic farmer in Vista, California. I didn't fall into this naturally. I was born into it. My parents are farmers, and I've been farming my entire life.
Awesome. So what are we drinking here, Frank?
This is our Mineola Sunshine Rain. So we took Mineolas, which are a beautiful tart citrus that is grown here, and we mixed it with our wildflower sweet organic honey based mead, and we get a tart, floral, refreshing, relatively sweet for our brand, but probably only 2% residual sugar, bubbly, light, beautiful mead.
Perfect. Yeah. And how about you? What are you drinking?
I am drinking a lemonade that is made with honey from our friends at Sage Mountain Farms and lemons and strawberries from here.
That sounds beautiful.
It's a little bit local and absolutely delicious.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What are you tasting in your mead?
Oh, man. Tasting lots of beautiful things in our mead. A rich honey note that is complemented by this tart, citrus, Mineola. And correct me if I'm wrong, Lily, but Mineola is a cross between a grapefruit and a tangerine?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So it's got more of a bitter tartness note than your typical tangerine, but then it's got a lot of sweet juiciness, way more than your typical grapefruit.
Yeah, it's like the balance of both worlds of them.
Yeah, and the bitterness is almost like grapefruit bitterness. I can definitely taste that.
Which adds a really nice note to the overall drinking experience.
Yeah. So if you ever buy our shop or see us at our farmer's market, get our Mineola mead. It's delicious.
Yes, no preservatives used, and bubbly, effervescent, beautiful.
All right. So let's start with like the history of Edge of Urban Farms, and how did farming begin here with your parents?
We have always, no matter where we lived, even when we didn't have farmland, we've had little patio gardens in pots, and then my parents found this place actually on Craigslist 13 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And it fell into place in that, like, well, there's space to grow food again, and we had kind of had a section where we couldn't grow food for a couple years where we just had like tomatoes just for us, which is very weird because we always have so many that they get to everyone who doesn't even want them. And we have been here in this house for 13 years and farming on the property for about 12 years. There's a little bit of time here and there where we weren't growing things intentionally. We had things that are just here doing their own process. But Edge of Urban Farm is our farm name, and it is our own little piece of heaven on the edge of the city.
So what did you guys start off planting? And how did you evolve to what you guys are growing today?
So we started off with row crops. We've always done row crops my entire life. We've had lettuces and tomatoes and bell peppers and eggplant and basil. And back in the day, my parents focused mostly on culinary herbs. And so they would ship those to Chicago. There was a very specific market in Chicago that wanted fancy California produce. And we've always kind of just gone with the fancy California produce route, where we grow things that are a little bit different but exciting. There's always something random growing here that we've found that's like, hey, let's check it out, see if it works. There's a tomato that I grew last year that is supposed to be the size of a dinner plate.
Oh boy.
And it's called the Kellogg's Breakfast. It was back in the day when I first grew it. Incredible. Had an amazing flavor, produced really, really prolific. And then this last year when I grew it, it didn't. And that's just how things go sometimes with rotating crops and keeping up with, like, thinking you're maintaining the soil and adding enough good things back to it and trying to keep as little till as possible. We still have things that change. But in 2020, we decided to shift from row crops, and we have gone mainly into trees and different deciduous. So we have a bunch of stone fruit, we have apples, we have avocados, and we have about 80 more avocado trees to plant at the end of the year.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
That's
yeah.
crazy.
Super exciting.
And what's, like, your guys' farming philosophy?
Well, organic. It's, you know, it's one of those things that since I was a child, it's just been how it is. It's my dad's livelihood. He's also an organic consultant, so he helps people who have been growing go from conventional into organic or maintain and become more productive as an organic farm.
Gotcha.
So there's that side, and my mom is also an organic inspector, so she is independent contractor for CCOF, and I'm hopefully going into that side of the business as well, and I'll be doing inspections as well eventually when I have time to do the training, which hasn't been possible the last 2 years.
That's crazy.
But we really are organic to the core. That's what we are, and we're not certified right now because when you certify, you have to have a certain amount of production to make it feasible for you. There's like a $600 window where you want to, I think it's after $600, you really think about, like, hey, do I need to do this? Am I going to have enough fruit to sell to market for it to be profitable for us to be certified this year? And we're not to that point again. We have been here in the past, and we've just maintained those practices along the way. So we do grow constitutionally organic, you know, it's how it is for us. But we're not certified at this point because we just haven't had enough production in the last 2 years. When in the next, like, year and a half to 2 years, it's going to be to the point where we'll be certified again.
That's awesome. And where does, like, regenerative fit into the picture for you guys? And how do you guys define that?
I think the biggest thing about being regenerative here is just being very conscious about what we're doing and making sure that we are maintaining the soil health and not, like I said earlier, tilling is just, like, been very, very minimal for us, and it's only really when necessary. Like, most of the beds I've hand turned, and we're maintaining all of those natural bugs and things, minus what the chickens get to eat. We're maintaining all the goodies that we can and trying to be as conscious with everything we do as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And keeping small loop in everything that we do. Like, we're trying to get mulch from even more local places, so we're not adding to, you know, the world. Just being smart about everything we do, I think, is how we're trying to maintain our, like, staying regenerative. And
how do you like to define regenerative? Like, when you think of all of the activities that a farmer could take on, what in your mind helps you understand this is regenerative practice? I mean, there might be a sliding scale within that, but, like, these things are what characterize regenerative to you and your family.
I think for us the biggest thing was, and for me the biggest thing is, I am still learning as I go because it's an everyday thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about maintaining and becoming more conscious of what we are bringing onto the property and taking off the property. So if I'm, like, thinking about, yes, that tree has to go, but does it have to go right now for us? We want to get rid of this crop, but can we put it somewhere else so it mulches something else? So it's kind of just a smaller There is actually a bee flying around the mead right now. I don't...
For the listeners?
That, just so you listeners know, there's a bee flying around the table.
It happens all.
They know.
Yeah, they know.
They know.
Yeah.
Something.
They know. So just being really, really conscious with staying on the, like, small loop and of, like, keeping things on the property and moving things and shifting the way that we can keep everything healthy in our own little ecosystem is how I define regenerative.
So a small loop, and then paying attention to what that loop is in terms of inputs, outputs, waste streams become inputs for other value-creating activities, and you're not just importing whatever you need and then exporting whatever you don't want and creating just, like, waste.
There's so little that's exported off this property willingly, let me just tell you. The things that leave the property, like, there's a little peach on the table right now, and I'm... All of me wants to give it to Frank.
No, no, no.
And 92% of me is like, but do you really want to give it away? That's the thing. You've worked so hard to get to this point. It's just, I think we're just being really smart about how we maintain this place. And by maintain, I mean just like every day. Like, we're getting our compost from San Pasqual Valley Soils. And that's just on the other side of Escondido. That's where we're trying to get the most of what we can. Yes, there are things that we use. Like, we just got our own little worm casting system that we're setting up. So we technically have livestock. I don't know if you knew that, but they're considered livestock.
Yeah.
So we have a little livestock box. And those are the things that are keeping us, trying to keep us regenerative. We're trying to, like, maintain as much as we can on the property without bringing too much from exterior sources.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So, what's a worm casting box?
That's the one thing I didn't show you. Yeah. That's funny. So, there's a box that we actually ordered online, and we've had worms over the years kind of doing their thing, and they require a very, very specific type of living circumstance that we haven't been able to maintain for them yet.
Okay.
But I ordered a box that you have 6 different layers, and you give them coconut core and... paper that is shredded. They really love shredded paper for some reason. Hmm. It's a great bedding for them, and eggshells, and then you feed them and switch sides. As I'm understanding, yes, I am not an expert on this. Please know, I am not an expert on this. YouTube it, because that's where I'm learning from. But I've been feeding them, and as they start to eat, their secretion becomes fertilizer.
Wow, that's super interesting.
Darwin, after, you know, his world-changing research focused on worms for the, like, last decade or 2 decades of his life. And he was like, everything I have done pales in comparison to what the worms are capable of. They're incredible. Yeah.
Huh. That's super interesting.
Worms are pretty incredible. Just, like, the crazy little thing that they are. They can do so much good for the soil. And if you don't have the right type of worms, they can do a lot of bad for the soil as well.
Yeah, I've always associated worms with, like, bad.
So earthworms.
Earthworms. Gotcha. Red wigglers.
Yeah. Okay.
Those
are
the ones you want. And you can actually buy them at the Vista Farmers Market. They're a couple tables down from you guys.
That's awesome. So how do pollinators play into your work here? Like, are you thinking much about pollinators? And
Yes, we actually have a whole little garden that's devoted to them on the pathway down to the farm. On both sides, there are a bunch of different plants that are specifically for the pollinators, and we have a lot of flowers now that I'm trying to add because it's my passion. I love flowers. I am not specifically named after one, but the nickname falls, you know, goes well. But we have milk thistle for the butterflies, and they actually haven't found it yet this year, which I find interesting. I'm waiting for the day that I see the leaves annihilated, because it happens that quickly. We have a bunch of different things for the bees, and I was telling Frank earlier that we had some bees on our property that have now been rehomed because they were moving into the neighbor's roof, and it was kind of frowned upon. They didn't really enjoy that was happening, so they had to go. But we have a lot of different things. The coolest thing to see, in my opinion, is the citrus blossoms when the bees take over, because it's intoxicating to smell it. And hearing them is the coolest hum.
Yeah.
It is super cool, and it's also very fun when you have friends come over who are nervous around bees because yeah. they just freak out. And it is so funny because they're doing exactly what the bee wants them to do. Like, come on. They're just living their life.
They just want honey.
Yeah, they just want to do their job and pollinate all the good things.
I feel like that is a fundamental, like, Southern California agricultural experience that a lot of people haven't had, which is to, like, smell the orange blossoms, hear the bees, and know that, like, this symbiosis that exists between yeah. us and pollinators and managed landscapes, when it's good, is good for everybody.
Yeah, it's but, incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
And when it's done properly, it's so you beautiful. Know, it's... really, really cool.
Yeah.
And that little window of time when the citrus blossoms are open is... That's why I planted so much citrus out front, because I want the front of the house to smell like that. I want people to drive by, the few cars that are on our little street, to drive by and go, wow, it smells incredible.
Yeah, I don't know if you're comfortable talking about what street you farm on, but yeah. It's a fun coincidence with our world.
We're actually on High Mead Circle.
So perfect. When I saw that, I was like, what?
The fact that it is, Mom and I have joked about this over the years. My mom and I have said that, you know, we really should collaborate with a mead maker, and just didn't make the connection until we were like, oh shit, we have so many Mineolas that have to be off the tree. And Mom contacted Frank and was like, hey, do you guys want to do this? Because please, yeah. please. But High Mead Circle is very fitting for this little place.
I don't know if you know this, but I think the first time I was here, we hadn't even had our first daughter, who's 9 years old now.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. And I drove up here and I was like, High Mead Circle. I have a feeling this is going to be part of my life. Here we are, you know.
And it's a full circle yeah. moment.
Yeah, that's very true.
That's good. That's really good.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I love that. Yeah.
You came here 9 years ago?
Yeah, I met Scott through Farmer Veteran Coalition. They, so Lily's dad, Scott Murray, is kind of this legendary organic farm consultant. And Michael Gorman, who runs Farmer Veteran Coalition, was like, hey, we know people in San Diego. You know, Scott Murray? I'm like, no, I don't. And then you should check him out. And then I like meet a guy from Chipotle who's like, do you know Scott Murray? And I was like, no, but that name's popping up.
Maybe and I then, should meet him.
And then some other yeah. person's like, do you know Scott Murray? And I'm like, okay, apparently I really need to meet this guy. And so I emailed your dad and was like, hey, seems like they have a lot of common interests. Is there a chance that we could meet? And he's like, yeah, I'll just be pulling weeds in the garden. You want to come down and start talking? And so it was a beautiful day. And yeah, the generosity of spirit that he has was blatantly obvious.
That is so fun. I didn't know that's how you guys met. That's yeah. really great.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have lots of connections in Southern California. And my dad is a legend in the field of organic farming.
Well, your mom is too.
You know, yes, Laura is incredible in the field as well. And I'm sure my dad would like to tell you that he has been in it for 46 years. He's right, been doing
right,
this
right.
Since he was in college.
75. Jeez. That's insane.
Yeah. He turned 70. No.
In 1975. 1975. 46 years ago.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It is. Crazy to wrap my head around. And he started his farming in Santa Cruz because, you know, all the hip kids do.
So what's his story? How did he get into the organic picture?
His mom always had things growing.
Okay.
And that's just how you grow food back
organically.
In the day.
Yeah.
Why would you add anything?
Buy fertilizer from
you know?
The store.
And then he went to Santa Cruz and started studying with some of the legends in permaculture up there. And became inspired from then on and has been organic ever since.
Wow.
And my mom fell in love with a farmer and she, I don't think she really knew what she was getting herself into with this guy because he is just hilarious and in his own farming world all the time. Today he has 3 different appointments with 3 different farms and that's just how his life is. He's always running with different farms and helping people create their dreams, and he is a very big dreamer. That's really cool to see.
Yeah,
that's yeah. awesome. So, like, you grew up with farming. It's just, like, natural to you.
Yes, you could say I was born with a green thumb.
Okay.
Yeah. We pulled up, and she was just, like, taking care of this beautiful row of new flowers, and it was so idyllic.
Yeah, that's my life.
Is it something you wanted to pursue, or is it something you've grown into?
I always said that I would never do it because it's what I was raised doing unpaid. I always joke with people and say that farmers have a lot of kids because they need free labor.
Yeah.
It's the only kind of labor you don't have to pay in California.
Right. And so, yes, that was a thing. And now, for all those years that I farmed and helped for free, I'm working for the family business now, which I didn't think was going to be a thing in my life. I really, my dream was to travel the world and get paid to do it. That was like what I told people always, that travel the world and get paid to do it. And so I did. I was a nanny for 10 months for an action sports family. I traveled all throughout the United States via tour bus, which was very fun. I went on about 52 flights in 10 months.
Whoa.
That was very fun. That was an experience for sure, because I had a 1.5-year-old and a 6-month-old when I started.
Whoa.
Those are young.
Two little girls that were, one was crawling in one direction, one was running in the other one. So my life became nannying and traveling the world, and that's really, I kind of fulfilled that niche at a very young
vision.
Age.
Yeah
that Bam. Vision was really interesting and exhausting in the best way possible, and I love those girls with every fiber of my being, and always will, because they taught me so much. I got to go to Australia with them. Wow. I got to go to Mexico. I survived a hurricane in Mexico.
Whoa.
Taught them some survival skills. That was a lot of fun. I will never forget that ever in my life, even if I try to.
What happened? Like,
were you remember Hurricane Patricia?
Yes, I do. You
so
were in the middle of that?
I was in Sayulita for that. Oh. And it was headed directly for Sayulita. And we had literally arrived the day before.
Yikes.
So that was quite the experience.
Have you ever been in a hurricane before that? No.
No, but okay.
I figured it out?
I'm a Girl Scout. I was raised with Boy Scouts. I have some survival skills, and so I like taped the windows and padded the windows up with all of the soft furniture we had in the whole place. I made sure there was nothing outside that could have broken the windows or obstructed our exits. And we were there for a day and a half. We hunkered down and just turned into a really, really intense rainstorm. And thankfully...
Jeez.
It moved and went to a banana plantation and just completely flattened it.
Whoa.
And there were no people injured in this hurricane. And I'm pretty sure that was just because of the like level of consciousness we were all operating at. Was like, no, we
yeah,
really
please
want to
move
go
that
home.
Thing. Slide it over.
Yeah. I remember my old boss, her husband was on tour still. His company is Nitro Circus, and so he was on tour with Nitro Circus. They were in I'm pretty sure it was Denver, and he was like, I'm bringing a helicopter in, we're flying you out. And I was like, no, you're not.
Okay, yeah, that's more dangerous.
So I got to live some pretty, pretty crazy experiences in those 10 and a half months. And then I ended up working for a hat company after that. And we ended up with so many hats in this house. It was ridiculous because I was the person who processed returns. So if it was returned with a nick in it, or this one had like some pieces that were pulled out of it, can't put it back into stock. So it has to come home with Lily.
Nice,
you know, she's
nice.
Gonna have 17 new hats today that she
Perfect.
Brings home. And that year
His
was like,
you
get a hat, you get a hat, you get a hat, and it was really fun. Yeah, it was. I learned a lot. And I learned a lot about how I would not operate my own business because the owner was not a nice human.
Aww.
And the people I worked with were incredible, and she did not understand or value them. And that's just heartbreaking to me, because you have to learn somehow. And starting at the bottom with the goal of getting to management one day, how our system is, however archaic it is, you have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And she just didn't like people who were self-starters. Didn't like it at all. So that ended right at the end of 2019, like right before Thanksgiving. I was laid off.
Okay.
And then I thought the world was ending, my life was over. I've never been asked to leave a job before. And it was just like a door opened for me. I went to Iceland in that October.
Oh, cool.
My life changed. It is the most incredible place I've ever been to, and I cannot wait to go back. Everywhere you look is like a freaking postcard. Literally everywhere. You'll be driving down the road, this side of the road, there's a perfect waterfall. And the locals are like, yeah, no, that's a small one.
Yeah, why are you impressed by that?
Iceland is insane. So that really helped bring me back from this like depth of working for a company that just did not value people whatsoever. And then 2020 happens and we're home and there's all this land. Let's farm it.
And an opportunity to transition it from annual row crops to perennial tree crops.
Yeah.
It seems like.
And in the beginning of 2020, my dad had talked about victory gardens because we were kind of at the point where we didn't really know what was happening and
would food be in the grocery store.
Food would be. So he was telling people that you should plant your victory garden. So we planted our own little victory garden where we had things that would maintain our house and our neighbors' houses, kind of. So we had some lettuces and things that would keep us going. Obviously, we still needed to supplement, but we were ramping back up, getting to the point of like, what are we going to do now? And how are we going to do this? And one of our good friends has an amazing business in the Phoenix area where he sells trees every year from Dave Wilson Nursery. And we've always had this amazing like, that's a cool idea. We'd love to do that. And it just happened that my dad was like, you know what? We're going to buy trees. We're going to see how it goes. And so we bought trees and they came 6 months later. And
thanks, COVID.
We had a little bit of things to do. Actually, it's not even thanks to COVID. It's, it's the you pre-order with them, and then you get them when the season, they're completely dormant. They're bare root. So you just get a stick and some roots that comes in a box.
Wow.
So we ordered the original trees from Peaceful Valley, and quite literally, it was a 5-foot box with sticks and roots in it.
Huh.
Gnarly. And now? You saw it.
Yeah, it's
beautiful. They're trees with beautiful peaches on them, and it's so cool to see.
And so did you go through an extensive design process, or are you kind of more get it started, learn as you go, design further?
I do not do any of the designing because my dad does the designing while he's winding down for the day. He designs our farm.
Oh, yeah. You know, all the lessons learned from the day get incorporated into the design.
So this is the layout is really his brainchild. And everything is planted very, very high density. So everything is 6 feet apart. They're social distancing. They're 6 feet apart. And even the avocado trees are 6 feet apart. And back in the day, they would plant them 18 to 24 feet apart and let them get to be these gargantuan trees.
Yeah.
And we won't be doing that. We'll be skirting them really nicely and keeping them small so that they can handle less water and maintain creating as much fruit as possible.
So explain the 6 feet apart to me, other than the COVID joke. But like, what's the importance between having them 6 feet apart versus 20 feet apart or whatever it is? Or what's the thought process behind it?
Maintaining as much, like creating as much as we possibly can in a small space.
Gotcha.
So they would plant avocado trees very far apart back in the day and just let them become these huge, huge things.
Like 3-story tall.
They're massive.
Jeez.
But they don't really cut them wisely or maintain them.
It's like a forest. It's like an avocado forest.
Full-on forest. And you have inches and feet of leaf litter. And that's just how it is.
Whereas when water was, a fifth of what it is now?
Yeah. And like, they would water for 24 hours once a month.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Which is a crazy, crazy way to do it. People always tell you, you know how much water avocados take? Mm-hmm. It's like this old wives' tale that everyone knows, apparently, even if they're not into farming.
Like 200 gallons?
Everyone knows.
Isn't it like 200 gallons of water for an avocado?
It's like 200 to 380 gallons a tree. There's the window that people will tell you.
Okay.
It's not true.
No?
No.
Okay, what's the truth?
That's the old way of growing.
Right. Super inefficient. Like, we were just like...
It's not efficient whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like, here, take a bunch of water and good luck. That's it. That's what you get.
Good luck. Godspeed.
Yeah, that's what you get. So it's really, really interesting to see how that's kind of been studied a little bit.
Okay.
But avocados are kind of like a commodity grown around here.
Mm-hmm.
They're not corn.
Yeah.
Or wheat, but around
here.
You're
a price taker. Unless you're doing organic, certified organic, you're a price taker. And it's hard to make an avocado ranch work now.
Well, and then you look at the packing houses, and the packing houses are who really makes the money because they're marking it up and then taking that. So there's so much to it, but the real reason we are planting 6 feet apart is because we want to get as much as possible on this property.
Mm-hmm.
And it's working. It's working really well.
Nice. What are your metrics of success here?
Well, in the past, that's the hard thing.
Yeah.
So we don't really have too much to show for what's going on right now, because it's been ramping up to get to this point.
And you guys used to do farm-to-table dinners here, and like, it's a demonstration site a lot of the time, right?
A lot of it is demonstration farming. My dad's thing that he would tell people is that we are a research farm.
Yeah.
Because we have so many different types of coffee that we're growing as well. It is there's like multiple little climates on our property, because we have a slope, and at the bottom of the slope, it's colder. That's where the orchard is. And so we have our little like pie piece. Mm-hmm. The tip of the pizza is the orchard. And then as you come up, getting up closer to the house, that's where the coffee is. So it's protected a little more. It just deals with wind. And so there's those things. But we really don't know, because we transition so much, and coffee takes time to get to the fruit. The peaches and the whole orchard takes time to get to the fruit. So it'd be fun to circle back in like 2 years when I can actually answer that.
And you're going to turn a huge bed, which you currently have, and grain and
cover crop
into avocados.
Yes.
Right in the middle.
Yes. So those avocado trees came to us in these little pots that were about 4 inches, and the tree was probably about 6 inches tall.
Jeez.
And that was a year ago.
Cool. Wow. And now they're
about 2 feet tall.
Wow.
Some of them. There's some that are kind of like crooked, so we don't really know, because I have to work on those and straighten them out, get them doing their thing. But those trees, we had about 130 saplings that came to us that were grafted by one of our clients' nurseries. And those trees have then been transplanted about 4 months ago. I transplanted them into those bags that you saw. Those are 3-gallon bags. So they'll get to be about 3 feet tall, depending on how happy they are in those bags. And our goal is to plant them in October, November.
Wow.
Cool.
So some of the current focuses are coffee and avocado and your orchard mainly.
Mm-hmm.
Are there anything else you're like focusing on this year that you're hoping to see fruits on in the future?
Our fun little thing that we want to do is kind of a subscription box based shipment when we have things in season. So one of the things we would offer is passion fruit, because the passion fruit is just starting to come on. Avocados ship very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of places in the country, you can't get them that are good for less than $6 a piece, which is just sad to me, because I think everyone should have accessible
avocados.
The joy
of avocado.
Yeah.
It's like so good for you. They like took it off of the bad fat list, and they're just like, yeah, just eat as much avocado as you can.
It's so good. And like my best friend, she lives in Georgia. Her finding avocados that aren't from Mexico
is impossible. Yeah, yeah.
So I've shipped her boxes from our friends' farms. Like, hey, this is, you got 30 avocados. Distribute them between you and your mom and dad and your sister, and just enjoy and have fun, because we'll see when I can do that again. But it's the goal one day is to have bougie boxes shipped to your door.
Ah, bougie regenerative.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
And flowers? Will that be part of the model?
Flowers, Mom and I are really, really trying to convince Dad. Flowers are just awesome. There's so much that you can do with them. And because they're so good for pollinators as well, as just being beautiful.
Yeah.
And you gotta have the beauty.
Yeah.
Besides the weeds. You know, we have so many weeds that are natural flowers that they're okay. But I really would love to do a lot of flowers as well. So,
what kind of flowers would you like to do?
I've started to buy some seeds.
Okay.
I have some snapdragons that I just planted this week as well. My favorite flower that is a bulb is called an anemone, and they're very, very beautiful. And apparently, they grow well around here. And it's just kind of like finding.
Sure, I understand.
Hey Siri.
Siri wanted to be a part of this interview.
Creeper, man. Sorry about that. So, yeah, I would love to grow a lot of flowers. My hopes is to grow, like, anemones and some bulbs. And we do have dahlias that we have going, which are my mom's favorite thing. And she's just gotten into growing those and watching them. Like, she planted them last year, so she was waiting for them to come out of their dormancy and do well this year. So it's kind of, it's something that we don't know. So it's going to be a lot of learning, but I would love to have flowers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love to have flowers.
And make the farm more beautiful.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get your pollinators going.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about organic and regenerative farms and like all the work your mom and dad does, what does the future look like in farming if we are to do those practices more and see the fruits of that labor? How do you see that shaping the future of farming?
That's what we have to do. That's the thing. I think a lot of people don't really know how much conventional ag has ruined the soil of the earth and how we don't have nutrients in our food, and people are wondering why they're not healthy because they're eating food that wasn't nutrient dense to begin with. So you're just eating empty food. It's just there.
Because the soil has been degraded so much that the plant now doesn't have the nutrients from the soil, so then the human doesn't have the
conventional avocados are injected, and they actually inject the tree with something that makes it grow and helps it get to fruiting faster, but it kills the tree in the process. So when you see those trees in the groves, it's just heartbreaking because you look at it and you see like all the fruit and everything, and it's doing well, but the actual trunk is slowly dying.
Jeez.
It's just this very interesting not-so-balance that we have in the world of there's so much buying going on, but people don't know who they're buying from or what they really are getting.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's so smart to like shop small and local and talk to your farmer and ask what they're doing and communicate and see like, okay, is this really something I want to be putting in our body and being more intentional?
And are they down to let you come visit? Like Joel Salatin talks about that, right? Like the ultimate organic test is, well, they let you go to your go to their farm and look at what they're doing.
Yeah.
And if the answer is no, like, well, what are they hiding?
Yeah.
And if the answer is yes, then you can trust them because they're like not hiding anything. It's just, yeah, we're growing food. It's
nothing complicated. You're working with Gaia. You really shouldn't, you should not be hiding anything. You should be really conscious about everything you do because we don't know how lucky we are until you lose it.
Yeah. And it's a hard industry to change too. There's a lot of money in it.
There is a lot of money in it.
Well, and we've got to feed humanity from it. I guess you grew up with a family that grew a lot of its own food.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that it's work, right?
Oh, yeah. We've worked on every single holiday. I think I can start to count a few holidays that we haven't actually worked on. It was almost like a Murray mandatory thing was on Christmas we're planting, Thanksgiving we're planting. So there's Christmas pictures of us at this property where we're on the bottom where the orchard is, planting lettuce on Christmas Day. All five of us planting lettuce on Christmas Day.
Dad's like, hey, everyone's gonna be home. We can get this lettuce in the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. One morning.
We woke up, we had bagels, we opened our presents, and then we planted that day. And that's just how
your
it went.
Your presents were lettuce seeds?
Honestly.
Probably a new
trowel. Some socks and trowels. Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting.
I got
you
new gloves, Lily.
Yeah. That's our life. That really is our life. And I hope you guys that I put on bee socks for today.
So
I could be with the theme of the day.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
But where were you going with your question?
Well, I guess appreciating how much work farming is, I think, you know, there's a lot of conversation about kids growing up and not knowing that food production takes farmers working, and they kind of expect that food is just in the grocery store.
Yeah, my dad actually tells a story of people saying they don't want to eat what he grew because it came from a farm, like, that's dirty. I don't want to eat what you grew.
That's
it has dirt on it.
Crazy.
It came from a farm, that's dirty. And he's like, well, where do you think your food comes from? And they're like, oh, just the back of the grocery store. That's where they have it. No, that is not true.
That's like my 3-year-old daughter, like, we're out of that. Can we just order it? It'll show up at the front door. I'm like, is this really what we've taught you?
Yes.
Okay, that's the starting point.
Yes.
Then you come here, and then you go, actually, check it out. Like, this is a baby one. This is a medium one. This is a big one. And then,
I had a friend come over in 2020 who is this, like, 6'5" guy. He's one of my brother's friends growing up. And he saw the corn growing at our house. And he's like, huh, what's that stuff? I said, that's corn. He goes, it grows above the ground? I will never forget that interaction because I just looked at him and was like, Sean, where do you think it grows?
thought it was a root vegetable, like a potato, you know?
How would the corn be so clean if it grows in the dirt? Yeah, that was quite the interaction for me when I really knew. Oh, okay.
This is real. Like,
what I know is not common knowledge.
Yeah.
And, it's just crazy how niche, like, everything is becoming. Mm-hmm. Even, like, farm knowledge is niche now. And, like,
Farming, there are knowledges that are niche. Coffee growing is ridiculously niche, right? Adapting it to Southern California where it hasn't been done before, and the amount of learning that is to be done in that.
Yeah, and it's just how that translates generationally is just that you end up with a product where people just don't know almost, and it's kind of like it just becomes a information silo almost.
Yeah.
As a professional in farming and seeing the need for farming to happen, there's an opportunity to encourage more people to become farmers. And I think one of the big challenges, so not to make this about me, but after I got out of the Navy, it was which entrepreneurial activity will yield an income that I can support a family from?
Mm-hmm.
It was a guiding question. And so I had a couple experiments, and one of them was farming. And it was hard to see that working, but creating alcohol out of agricultural products, a lot of value added there, so a lot of opportunity to create a living for a family. So as someone who's practiced farming, grew up in a farming family, what advice would you give to people who are interested in being the change they want to see in the world and changing the food system by becoming regenerative farmers? What kind of business models make sense?
I think the biggest thing is starting small, because in farming, if you just go at it gung-ho, you're going to learn a lot very quickly, and most likely you'll be deterred.
Lose a lot of money. Yeah, very quickly.
That's just how it goes, but be persistent with yourself and everything you're doing. Be persistent, because you have to go through a lot of trials to get to the point that you'll be happy with what you're doing, and it really takes a lot of work every day. When people tell me that they thought farming was easy, I laugh in their faces, because it's just not.
But you are glowing. When we first pulled up, we've met a number of times. Just see the light in your eyes and the glow in your skin. This obviously suits you.
Yeah, I do. I didn't think that I was going to love it as much as I do.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys haven't met my little four-legged coworkers, but they're the coolest coworkers ever.
The cats.
The cats. Their names are Fish and Chips, because they were our last meal before the world shut down. Mom and I went to Santa Monica Seafood on our way back. We were like, you know what?
Who knows what's going to happen?
Who knows? Let's go have a meal. So we had fish and chips, and then for my mom's birthday, I got her two cats in 2020, and we looked at each other, we're like, spaghetti and meatballs doesn't really have a ring to it, but you know it does. Fish and chips has a great ring to it. And can you imagine yelling fish and chips across the neighborhood?
Fish and chips!
It never gets old. And I really do, it's taken me a while to get to the point, because it's been so much heavy manual labor up until now, where I almost have everything done. Minus the 80 avocado trees.
Looking forward to that.
I feel really happy with what I'm doing. And I'm incredibly blessed that I get to work for my family business and walk outside to my job every day. And that I do have time now that I can go away for a couple days.
Beautiful.
Sometimes.
What is there a story that sticks out the most that was this is very rewarding work to me, even though it was super hard work, that you want to share?
Probably picking the first peach that I grew.
Okay.
I cried.
Okay.
I could cry right now thinking about it.
Oh.
It's
because you dug these
rewarding.
How many holes? 3-foot holes?
Well, now there's 106 holes down there.
And you dug them all. Almost. Good hole digger.
I dug probably 100 of those holes.
Wow.
With the help of my parents, and we did auger them ourselves, but the auger, there wasn't enough moisture in the soil to push the dirt back out, which is what it'll do when you have the right moisture content. Well, Southern California, we don't have the right moisture content unless you add it yourself. And it's it's probably when I picked the first peach that I grew. That was so just was incredible.
So was that moment for you, like, just seeing all that hard work, like, pay off, mm-hmm. essentially? And it was just, like, it came to fruition, mm-hmm. right there for you, and you're like, it's all worth it?
Yeah. The actual moment of blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah, it happened.
It happened. And then this year, I had the same thing happen, because these little peaches, yeah, the Sauzy Swirl, so this is my favorite peach so far. It's beautiful, and even the stone on the inside is flat like the peach. It's just really, really cool.
But the flavor of it is like, it's one of those things that if you have not tasted anything like this, you cannot describe it.
Yeah.
Because it's just like heavenly. It is so sweet, but floral and fruity, and there's a little bit of like tang and skin pith.
Well, it's what you want your store peaches to be, but they never are.
Yeah.
It's better than any store peach. It is so aromatic. And if people haven't experienced it, then they'll never understand it.
Yeah. And that's the main goal, is to have people truly experience what food should taste like. Mm. And that's what I've been doing with people my entire life. Like, if you say you don't like something, I will introduce you to it once again and see if you still don't like it.
So that's an interesting idea. If, like, our culture is evolving towards an experience-based economy, to think past food as a commodity and towards an experience, and how can what you do become an experience that really like changes people's awareness of what reality can be.
There's so much to learn that you know, if you grew up not liking something, it's probably because it came from a can and that's where you were geographically, that's how it was available.
Like Brussels sprouts. My stepdad talks about canned Brussels sprouts in Okinawa.
Ooh.
I was like, oh, yeah, sorry, man. That's terrible.
That would be absolutely terrible.
And the first time he had real Brussels sprouts, he's like, oh, I can't do it. And we all ate them, and we're like, this is delicious. And then, like, a few times later, he's like, okay, I'll give it a try. What? This is Brussels sprouts? This is the complete opposite. Like, we had, like, cooked cabbage in a can that tastes terrible. This is, like, amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My neighbors talk about their family, which is in Kansas and Texas. And they talk about how their family members are like, we really wanted to make this weekend, but we don't have the ingredients available to make it.
Hmm.
And that forces them to eat seasonally and locally.
Cool.
Hmm.
Versus here in Southern California, we have everything sprouts and Fraser Farms that have things 90% of the year.
Yeah.
And you can even find stone fruit when they're completely out of season and you shouldn't locally be eating them.
Yeah.
They're in the store.
Shipped up from South America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really interesting.
Yeah. Seasons. I mean, that's another thing you have to explain to people sometimes, is like, this is a seasonal thing. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what?
Like corn.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the ones that people don't think about it being a seasonal thing, because you'll almost always see it in the grocery store.
Hmm.
There's always either a package that is saran wrapped, that is corn that was shipped from somewhere, or you get to the point where it's the local season, and there they are in the giant tubs where they're 10 cents an ear, which, how is the farmer making money off of that?
Subsidies.
Mm-hmm. Subsidies. Frank says, subsidies.
That's how they're making money.
Yep, that is it. That's true. That's how they're making money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Red Pill Podcast. Very good. I mean, is there anything you specifically want to talk about, Lily, that we haven't covered?
I have a little list.
Okay.
Oh, I wonder. I have a little list which I made a while ago that tells all the trees that we have on the property.
Mm.
Let's hear it.
Which is just hilarious for me to put into words, because we have so many different types of trees that I might have even missed some.
Nice.
Can
I play the flute too, saying these? No.
That would be beautiful.
I mean, that would be beautiful, and
we might need to practice it.
We might need to practice a little bit. Yeah. So I have just... this was made on Valentine's Day, actually, which is very funny. My Valentines are my trees.
Yeah.
So this is just not quite comprehensive, because I'm sure I miss things. Okay. But on the property, planted right now, we have cherries, aprium, apricots, apples, nectarines, peaches, plums, pluots, nectoplums, a pluary, pears, persimmons, avocados, tangelos, blood oranges, valencias, navels, four types of tangerines, grapefruit, bear's lime, Mexican sweet lime, Meyer lemons, papaya, coffee, and macadamia, and pecans.
Jeez. And how big is this? How many acres?
So this place is an acre.
1 acre. Wow.
1.2.
And you have all of those. That's crazy.
And we have all of those and multiple varieties of most of them.
Jeez.
So you'd be amazed with what you can do in a tiny space.
Yeah. Mia set that example beautifully.
Yeah, that's awesome.
How do you manage water?
We collect a lot of rainwater.
Really?
In the little rains we have 2 300-gallon drums that are the totes that actually came from the wild animal park, and they were full of hand sanitizer. Yeah. So think about that. 300 gallons of hand sanitizer. Gross.
Well, yeah, the farmers at the wild animal park.
Wild animal park. Yeah. So those totes were brought to us because they just get recycled. They don't get reused. Certain companies do, but most of them don't. Right. So those were brought to us by one of our friends. And in the process
was
of being organic. Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Our lovely friend, Manna Gabay. He's just great.
Liberian.
Incredible farmer.
Veteran. Yeah.
So he brought these totes and was like, well, I had them on my property and I don't want
them to go to waste.
So Mom and I filled them up, and there's a process you have to go through for them to be able to be used in organic. So you have to rinse them to a certain point that there's no residue left in them. So imagine these giant totes, which I hope you guys know what I'm talking about. If not, Google it so you can get this mental picture, because
it's like 4.5 feet by 4.5 feet by 4.5 feet. It's a big cube.
And they have these metal kind of cages around them. Mm-hmm. So my mom and I are up in the street above our house, because the runoff can't go on our property. Up in the street above our house, pouring stuff from the hose that is strung across up over the orchard out front to get the hose up there. And we add too much water, because then we can't rotate them. And you have to flip them onto every side to have it clean the inside.
Yeah, totally.
So we had to do that twice with both of these giant totes. But on the property right now, we have about 600 gallons in the totes, and then we have rain barrels on all four corners of the property in the season, and then about 12 barrels throughout the property that are all full that we're saving for when it's really, really hot. Jeez. So we won't be paying for the additional water in June and July. We'll be using the rainwater we've collected.
That's so awesome.
Your orchard is irrigated with rainwater?
Not all the time.
Okay.
But when it comes to like the really, really hot months, where we're trying to let the other farmers use the water as much as possible, we're going to use the rainwater we've collected.
Cool.
And funny enough, the cats love rainwater, so they'll find it wherever it is on the property and drink that before they drink the water that we have put out for them.
Weird. That's cool.
So I find the same thing with my cats. They drink everything but the water in their bowl. So toilet water, sink water, they'll just, it's like, no, this is for you. They're like,
I don't want that. You put it out for me.
Yeah.
I don't want that. No.
On my property, we have a stump that still collects water.
Oh.
And that's our cat's primary spot.
That's the spot.
Yeah, I don't know. Have you ever seen this? Where you cut a tree and then water still collects in the stump.
Interesting.
I like it.
Well, yeah, that's awesome.
It's pretty cool.
Well, Frank, you got any more questions?
I'd love to taste your lemonade, if that's okay.
Yes, please. I made half a gallon of it.
Okay.
With Meyer lemons and strawberries from the property.
Looks beautiful. It's got a beautiful pink peach kind of color.
You want 6 S's?
6 S's. Do you know about the 6 S's?
I do not.
Really? So it's our way of tasting mead in a quick and efficient way, but allows people to really tune into their senses and slow down and appreciate something. So sight, sniff, sip, swish, swallow, savor. There you go. That's what you got. Yeah, so the color. Give it a, what would you say?
Colors. Pink hazy?
Pink.
Yeah, it does go.
Hazy pink?
Yeah.
Yeah, peach. I mean, it's almost a...
It's funny, it is a little peachy.
More peach colored. Mm-hmm. And then sniff. Oh, I'm getting some lemon.
Definitely get the strawberry, too.
Get some strawberry.
Honey.
Oh, the honey. The honey's like a base note. It's very down there. But yeah, so isn't that cool when you tune into your brain? The sniff part of your brain is next to the memory part of your brain. So it brings up memories. And then sip is just the first impression when you give it a sip.
Wow. Sweet.
It's bright.
Bright. Yeah. And like citrus comes in. But then swish is the next step. So after your sip, you swish it around because you have taste buds on the roof of your mouth, the cheeks, under your tongue.
That's where the strawberry and the lemon really play together well.
And then swallow, when you choose to swallow. Your brain actually turns off a part of your brain that's like, is this thing in my mouth going to kill me? Is this going to kill me? Is this going to kill me? And you're like, no. Then you swallow. That goes off and it accesses more information. Hmm. So I don't know if you guys notice more when you go to swallow. But
interesting.
The honey really comes through.
The honey's
through.
There.
Yeah, it's super smooth. Nice honey.
Wow.
And then savor is kind of, how do you feel?
How does it make you
as
feel?
It affects your body.
I love it.
It's like enlightening.
Super refreshing. Refreshing. Yeah.
Yeah, so there are 4 Meyer lemons in this, 3 strawberries, and 2 tablespoons of honey.
Only 2 tablespoons of honey in a half a gallon.
Wow. Yeah. I don't do sweet when I'm drinking lemonade because I really love lemons.
Mm.
And especially Meyer lemons, they're already sweeter to begin with.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're not having that like Eureka lemon kind of back of the mouth feel.
Intense. Yeah.
And honey has such a nice flavor. And sometimes I'll even put a little bit of maple syrup in it to get, like, the mineral aspect of maple syrup.
Nice. Is there something... I mean, birch trees, I know you can tap syrup, but in Southern California, is there some... I guess agave.
Agave, which is grown everywhere around here, which is hilarious because they get massive.
Yeah.
And people plant them right next to buildings. Like, this is smart. Downtown Vista, there's like 8 of them planted right next to each other. Every time I walk by, I'm like,
good luck with that.
Yeah, you have no idea what's coming.
But I guess people survived off of agave sap here, right? And you can just tap the central spike, or do you have to wait until the mass goes up?
I haven't personally done any of the agave growing because it takes up so much space.
And time, right?
And time.
Yeah.
Can you... Sorry. Is there a agave mead, or is that just a whole different thing?
No, I mean, so in Mexico, pulqueria is like kind of this catch-all term for like things you ferment that are not beer or wine.
Oh.
Pulque being like the beverage that's fermented before you turn it into tequila or sotol or any of the agave-based spirits. So like you might do a piña and agave pulque. Where you like co-ferment pineapples and agave nectar.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And then like drink it at 6% or 8% in Mexico City. It's kind of a popular thing and like a cool craft artisanal industry.
Have you ever personally like fermented agave at all or no?
No, my focus is on honey and wanting to tell the stories of honey. But I think like the idea of fermentation as a opportunity to add value to regenerative agriculture.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really cool, and as we look at climate adaptation, I think agave in Southern California makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And Brooke Sarson, or excuse me, not Brooke, Deanna Moore, who used to work at Chocolatl, is now getting very into sustainable agave growing in Southern California and tequila production, which the state is apparently interested in.
Interesting.
So, yeah. Just a little.
Huh. There is so much alcohol in Southern California.
It's a $1.5 trillion industry. It's as big as the food industry.
Just thinking back to like Stone in the early days, there's so much that has come and gone and grown with this, the culture. It is absolutely amazing to observe.
Mm.
It's crazy.
And you guys like knew Greg.
I've known Greg Cook since I was 7 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, he was another one who told me about Scott. That was the third one. I was like, okay. Okay,
yeah, Greg's
like,
friend.
Hey, you should talk to him. Yeah, yeah.
So Greg poured my brother Joe's first beer, and he poured my first beer. So like our first legal drinks out in the world were at Stone with Greg, who is our family friend.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Sla Food is a very small world. I've known Greg forever. It kind of like branches out from there. You meet people, and then you're like, eh. Cool.
Oh, we're gonna be friends forever.
Yeah.
On the same page here.
Yeah.
Can I have more of your lemonade?
Of course. I'm happy you guys like the lemonade. Thank you for partaking with me.
Yeah, it's delicious.
All right, that's a wrap with Lily and Edge of Urban Farms. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us. We appreciate all the support we can get. If there's anything else you would like to know more about, feel free to email us at podcast@goldencoastmead.com with your questions, and we'll try to answer them to the best of our ability for you. Now here's the weekly bee joke. Where does a bee sit? On its behind. Mead out.